This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Don't go to bed angry. Be communicative. Be patient. Before my wedding, a family friend told me, tongue only slightly in cheek, pay the maid and the hairdresser and the rest will follow. But our grandparents' advice on what makes a good marriage may be losing relevance. According to a recent study by the Pew Research Center, how Americans view marriage has changed over time. The survey found that children are seen as less central to the success of a marriage, while happy sexual relationships and sharing household chores took precedence. It's Thursday, which means in a few minutes, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson will join us. She's been asking readers some of their attitudes about marriages on the pages of her syndicated advice column. Later in the hour, the stealth life of a restaurant critic. But now, what do you value most in a marriage? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Carrie Funk. She's a senior researcher at the Pew Research Center and joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's begin with actually the end of a marriage. One of the findings of the study was that choosing to end a marriage over staying in an unhappy one is that attitude is rising.
Right. I mean, we just asked people a couple of questions in terms of their attitudes about divorce. And what was striking is how much common ground there was in thinking about this question. So that if they had to choose between, you know, just two choices, which is preferable, maintaining an unhappy marriage or divorce would be preferable in that case to maintaining an unhappy marriage.
And this is sort of a change from the stay together for the sake of the kids attitude that used to prevail.
I think what we're, and in particular where we really see the change is in terms of the role of children in terms of being central to a successful marriage.
Explain that a little bit further.
Well, we compared our results to a similar survey taken back in 1990 and even earlier, and where there were a number of kind of ingredients that were, each one was rated in terms of whether it was very important for a successful marriage or not so important. A number of things stayed the same. Just two things changed, and one of the big things that changed was that fewer people considered children very important for a successful marriage. And in the kind of the rank order you mentioned, you know, faithfulness is number one. 9 out of 10 people say that. A happy sexual relationship is right up there. A number of other things in the middle. But children fell 24 points compared to 1990.
And what rose? What took its place?
And what took its place really is sharing household chores. Mm-hmm. And that went up 15 points. And that's pretty unusual to see that kind of change over time.
Another person who's been writing about the pitfalls of love, marriage, and divorce is Amy Dickinson. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us this time from the studios of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Welcome.
Hi. And I would love for Carrie to sort of clarify this idea of household chores kind of taking precedence over having children. My impression is that what people think is that having children isn't central to having a happy marriage, but having a household partnership is central to having a happy marriage. Is that right?
Yeah, I think what the results are telling us is, or at least suggesting, is that people are thinking about marriage differently than they did, say, 15 or 20 years ago, and particularly in terms of the role of children within the marriage.
And what didn't go down was the happiness children bring to an individual person. It's
right.
Just the essential element of having children in a formula for a happy marriage.
Right. I mean, absolutely. You know, children are still a very important part of our lives, and those who have children are, you know, very likely to call that relationship important to their personal happiness.
Amy, what have you been seeing on this question of staying in an unhappy marriage for the sake of the kids or any other reason versus getting divorced among the readership of your column?
Well, this all started. This has been a fascinating dialogue, and I'm very interested to note that anecdotally, the people who have written to my column on this topic fall very much within what I see from this Pew study statistically. It's really, really interesting because one of the things the study shows is how complicated we are. We hold these very kind of contradictory ideas about what makes a happy family, what makes a happy marriage. And in my column, it all started with one letter from a woman who said she'd been married for 8 years. She had a 6 or 7 year old son. And she learned that her husband had been unfaithful to her virtually during their entire marriage. She was very angry. She said that they had settled into this sort of separate camps, almost not speaking, but not angry in front of the child. And she was just very, very sad and unhappy. And she asked me, do I stay in this for the sake of the child? And I said, in my view, a good divorce trumps an unhappy marriage. And I asked readers to weigh in, and I heard from so many people, a lot of people sort of middle age who were reflecting on their own parents' experience and how as children their lives were affected by their parents' divorce, and also from a lot of people who were in unhappy marriages, ended them, and mainly, honestly, from women feeling that their lives had improved for their kids.
By getting out of a bad marriage.
By getting out of a bad marriage. And I look at that as I think bad marriages can be very chaotic. And, you know, I believe as a parent and as somebody who looks at these things that, you know, stability is really important in terms of, you know, the relative happiness of a family. And that unhappy marriages can be very kind of chaotic and frightening. And that when that tension basically dissipates, things do improve. Although, as we all know, the economic status of a lot of families changes sometimes very drastically upon a divorce. And obviously that has an impact on kids.
And this question of generational differences, Carrie Funk, certainly is borne out in the study, that the attitudes about actually almost everything across the board differ by age, but specifically this question about staying in an unhappy marriage differs by age.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a number of changes. These kinds of changes tend to happen slowly over time, say over 30 or 40 years. And so we're seeing lots of changes that way over time in our behaviors, and one of them has to do with the divorce rate. And so, you know, it's not surprising we're also seeing going hand in hand with that is our attitudes and our beliefs about these things.
And so some of these changes in trends, certainly trends about living together before marriage, even to some degree having a child before marriage, has to do with the shifting demographics of the population, that fewer people in your study were from an older generation than they would have been when you asked these questions 20 years ago.
What was interesting about that was comparing older and younger people in 1990 with today, we saw that drop across the board. So it didn't seem to be that issue per se. I think what's going on is a shift that's broader than that.
What would you account for it?
Kind of as we've been talking about, I think people are thinking about the marital relationship a little differently, that it's not just for the purpose of having and raising children.
Is that borne out in your readers, Amy, that there people are getting married for reasons other than having children?
Well, I think that what we're seeing is that people can imagine having a family outside of marriage. We can imagine having a family as a single person, men and women. We can imagine having a family with a same-sex partner. We are now imagining having families under all sorts of different circumstances, and we can see that this will work out. You know, I'm of a generation where maybe the first generation of a fairly high divorce rate. My own parents were divorced. And so I have probably a different view in that I think it's possible, it certainly was in my case, to be well-raised and to have a happy childhood in a single-parent home. And guess what? I have a single-parent home. So I know, you know, I know that that's possible to do. And, you know, this was revealed in the statistics that a vast majority of Americans feel that a two-parent household is preferable, right? Is that right, Carrie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A majority think that a child needs both a father and a mother in the home to grow up happily.
Right. And yet, of course, as our experience shows, half of us don't have that. And yet, you know, more than half of us think that that's vital. So, you know, that's part of the contradiction that I actually really enjoy.
Well, it's sort of the difference between thinking about things on a broader social level and thinking about your own circumstance.
Right.
Let's take a call from Suzanne in Durham, North Carolina. Suzanne, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
You're on the air.
Yes, my husband and I have been married for 20 years, just celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And I have found that the single most important element in a good marriage is the truth. Telling the truth, being truthful, and writing it out when the truth is difficult to handle.
So the unvarnished truth?
The unvarnished truth. I think life itself deals you ways to have the truth be shown if you're not telling it. So it's not just about something that you speak. I think it's a way of living. And implicit in that is a loyalty to the marriage and feeling that one or the other of you will always know the truth, and if either one of you does not, that it will be shown to you and that you will be loyal to the truth in yourself and to the truth in your mate. And it works like a charm, but I must say it's not easy.
Suzanne, thanks for your call. Amy, what do you think about the truth as a central tenet?
Well, I love that, especially when Suzanne talks about loyalty, because my experience in very long marriages, you know, longer than 20 years, is that couples who have been together for a very long time, to me, seem to do this in common. They hold their partner's interests on equal or even greater footing than their own. So if you have two people in a relationship and each feels that the other's interests are of as great or greater interest than, you know, importance than their own, this is great because people will subvert their own selfish desires in order to satisfy their partner. And this goes both ways. If you have two people who are willing to kind of hold back on their own desires for the other person, that's fantastic.
We're talking about what makes a successful marriage and how that's changed over the years. Let us know if you have any tips for making marriage work at 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. More with Carrie Funk and Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson in a minute. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson is with us for every other Thursday visit. We're talking about what makes a successful marriage and some of the surprising findings from the latest Pew Research survey. A couple of examples. Kids are now one of the least mentioned factors in a good marriage. Sharing chores and happy sexual relationships were cited more often. And almost three times as many Americans said that the purpose of marriage is the mutual happiness and fulfillment of the couple rather than the bearing and raising of children. There's a link to all the survey results on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. We also do our very own unscientific poll on the phones today. What do you value most in a marriage? If you have any secrets for a successful one, give us a call at 800-989-8255. You can also email talk@npr.org. Amy Dickinson writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. We are also joined by Carrie Funk, a senior researcher at the Pew Research Center, and of course by you, 800-989-8255. I want to talk a little bit more about having children outside of marriage, because there was a lot of data on that. Could you sum that up for us, Carrie?
Sure. I mean, this is one thing we know from government sources, that the percentage of births to unmarried women has really gone up over the past 40 years. So this is something that's going on more often.
But it's not teenage mothers.
It's not necessarily teenage mothers. What's happening, one of the explanations has to do with more people living together. That's one of the reasons why we think it's gone up in terms of the ages. The other is, and so they're not necessarily teenagers. They're more likely to be older, say 20 and up. But people still are concerned about it, have mixed feelings perhaps about what's going on with unwed mothering.
It's funny. It seemed like there was sort of an odd mix of data that isn't totally contradictory, but overlaps in interesting ways. So the idea that children are less important to a successful marriage. However, children continue to give enormous amounts of happiness. People are in general concerned about having children before marriage. On the other hand, rates of children before marriage are also going up. So it's not necessarily that the actions match the attitudes.
Well, that's where I think it's the separation between the marital relationship and the parental relationship is coming in, that you can do the one without the other.
Amy, would you concur that there's a growing separation between being a parent and being a spouse?
Yes, I would. And I think it's because we are all lately devoted to our own personal happiness. And we all know that children can make us very, very happy, and that other adults can make us very, very unhappy. And there's less of a devotion to the idea that we will subvert our own desires long enough to kind of make a union work. I mean, you hear people say all the time, this is what gets me about the letters that come in about household chores, for instance. He leaves the towels on the floor. It's so disrespectful. Like, people feel that a lot of these kind of mechanical aspects of a partnership are large signals about how a person views them.
Yeah, it's not that it's hard to pick up a towel. It's that not doing so is a signal of disrespect.
Right. And I think also parents see that children are a stress point in a relationship, especially if you want to be happy and well-rested all the time. And you're not thinking, you know, I'm going to spend the next 5 years sleepless and raising little kids. And then I'm going to think about the rest of my life. A lot of people feel like he needs to get up half of the time to feed the baby because I'm getting up half the time to feed the baby. And there's less of an idea that you're going to delay your own sort of personal advancement in order to get going with a family.
Let's hear from Andy Liz in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, I can't hear you that well. I've been married for about 6 years. I'm on the young end of it. I'm turning 30 this year. And my husband and I have, from the beginning, have had a 50-50 relationship, and it's been wonderful. We do have a five-year-old at this point, and I'm expecting my second. But even with the children involved, we still split everything down the middle. With our first one, he got up to feed, and I breastfed, and he had milk ready for it, you know, and we both work, and I think you have to do it when you're both working, because if not, both people are just going to be so overwhelmed with, you know, one person's going to be resentful because the other person's not doing anything around the house. And, you know, to survive nowadays, especially young couples like us, you have to work. It's very hard to have a parent at home doing everything. And so I really agree with the survey and the fact that, you know, sharing responsibilities, even the child rearing, is extremely important to maintaining a happy household and a sane mind, basically.
And is that 50-50 split something you needed to convince your husband on, or was he all for it?
No, he's been all for it from the beginning. I initially didn't even want to have kids right away, but he really wanted to be a daddy, so he convinced me on that respect. And even when we lived together for a couple of years before we got married, and it was still, you know, he did dishes, I did laundry. It was always split down the middle. It's just, we just had to do it that way because there wasn't enough time for one person to take care of everything.
Thanks for your call. I think that a lot of these trends have to do with more women working, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And actually, in my column one time, I answered a letter from a stay-at-home mom suggesting that, I mean, my assumption was that she did the majority of the housework and the child rearing. She described herself as a stay-at-home mom. And when I answered that letter with that assumption, I heard from a lot of people who were like, you know what? When dad comes home, he needs to pick right up and share. And this has been an education for me. I actually didn't see it that way. I saw the breadwinner, you know, as winning the bread, and in a, you know, stay-at-home parent, I figured that any stay-at-home parent would take on the majority of the child rearing and the majority of the housework. But I am hearing from parents that even when one stays at home, they do expect the one who comes home from work to do their share. And, you know, this 50-50 is fascinating to me, and I love hearing from people when it works out really well. It shows how compatible this couple is, really, that they haven't had to kind of go into counseling to figure that out or draw up a chart. I'm interested also, and I've asked in my column, how couples deal with their finances. And this is another, I think, indicator of where we are with marriage, in that a lot of couples handle their finances essentially separately.
And actually, there are some interesting breakdowns demographically in the data about expectations of financial success and marriage. Carrie Funk, two of the things that people were asked about in terms of essential elements of a marriage were housing and was it a stable financial? I forget how it was phrased.
The wording was adequate income, but
adequate
yeah, you
income
had the idea.
And housing, and those two things as essential elements to a happy marriage were more important among Blacks and Hispanics than among whites, which I thought was interesting. Although marriage rates are lower among those groups.
Right. And I mean, and it's also true that they're more important among people who, say, are earning lower incomes. So some of those things go together. But some, I believe, in terms of Blacks and Hispanics, it's even when you control for things like differences in education or income, you're finding that pattern.
And what's the explanation for that pattern, do you think?
It's a little tricky. What you look across all the items, there's a couple of things that stand out. One is in terms of children, Hispanics as a group are more likely to say children are very important to successful marriage. There seems to be a little different emphasis among Hispanics on children. And then across all nine items, in some ways, it's the non-Hispanic whites that are standing out, a little less likely to call many of these items very important for a successful marriage.
So in general, non-Hispanic whites are sort of not having as many of these categories rise to a 9 or a 10 on the scale of importance at all.
Right.
Huh. That's interesting. Let's hear from Jeff in Ann Arbor. Jeff, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Talking about successful marriages, my grandfather at their 50th anniversary, he was asked about that, and he just stood up and he said, it's easy. It's just two words. Yes, dear.
At my parents' 40th anniversary, my dad said that the success of a marriage can be judged by the depth of the teeth marks in your tongue, that how often you've bitten your tongue and shut up is a measure of how good your marriage is. Let's hear from Linda in Bridgeway, South Carolina. Linda, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. My husband, we've been married 43 years. We were married when we were 20, and we found that a sense of humor has helped as far as we're concerned, with a successful marriage.
What has sense of humor helped you with?
Oh, going through all of life's traumas, illnesses, death of family members, birth of children. I mean, you've got to maintain a good, healthy sense of humor so you can laugh at yourselves. And, you know, I mean, everything else matters. Love and physical relationships and everything else matters. But if you can't laugh with each other, gosh, it's sunk.
Yeah. In your 43 years, what has the household chore split been?
Actually, we've kind of evolved into doing what each one of us likes. And so we don't actually say 50-50. However, you know, if I don't feel like going to the grocery store, he does. If, he doesn't feel like hanging up clothes, I do it. I mean, it's just, you know, one of those things where we basically we share things, but we don't do the percentage. We did do it. You know, we tried that, and that was another thing to laugh at. when you get into making charts and doing stuff like that, you're putting too much emphasis on things instead of each other.
Linda, thanks for your call. We have an email from Rebecca who echoes what Linda said. She says, couples should not underestimate compatible senses of humor. If you laugh at many of the same things, and if a couple is able to laugh at themselves, it can get them through a lot. My husband and I might have a doozy of a fight, but later we're both able to laugh at ourselves. I assume that's something that comes up a lot for you, Amy, that a sense of humor is a pretty essential element.
Oh, absolutely. And not only in a marriage, but in terms of just the resilience required to, like, lead an emotionally happy and fulfilling life, there's nothing trumps a sense of humor. So well done, Linda. And, you know, she pointed out a point I was trying to make earlier, which was that she doesn't want to burden her husband. Her husband does not want to burden her. These are two people who are sharing one another's, you know, joys and their burdens.
Let's take a call from Amy in Winston-Salem. Amy, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm actually here folding clothes and hanging up laundry right now.
Multitasking.
Because I don't mind doing, quote-unquote, more than half of the housework as a stay-at-home mommy, because I wouldn't want to do more than half of his paid job.
And have you had that conversation explicitly with your husband, or is that just sort of the way it's fallen down?
We tried alternating chores and all that kind of stuff early in the early part of our marriage, but it's kind of come to a place where, you know, why make it an uncomfortable situation when he's home?
So, Amy, if housework is not so important to you, what do you think makes a marriage work? What is important to you?
Open and honest communication.
Yeah.
That has to be the key for us, and rolling with the punches and understanding that people are going to change and evolve and not necessarily, you know, resenting that.
Thanks for your call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's hear from Annie in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, great. I'm actually not married. I'm newly engaged. But before I even said yes when he proposed, I said that the thing that was most important to me was that we make a commitment not to be each other's problem.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I told him, you know, life is hard enough. Marriage is going to be hard enough. We're going to get our share of problems and issues to deal with. Let's not be the reason why each other is upset. And I just see so many marriages where people nitpick or criticize each other or pick fights or argue over the little things or things like that. And I feel like marriage is going to be hard enough without us needing to cause problems for each other. So that was my ultimatum for him in saying yes, was we got to make a commitment not to be each other's problem. And he said fine, so I said yes.
He said yes, dear. I promise not to be your problem. But, you know, I love that because actually, and I hope that, Annie, that you and your fiancé choose to do this premarital counseling. Not, you know, it doesn't have to be this super formalized thing, but where you sit down with each other and you talk about your values. And you should talk about things like housework, and you should talk about your finances. But you really want to explore your values. What kind of family will we make? And, I agree. It's great not to be one another's problems, but you may need to get a little more specific.
Well, you know, we've been talking about values in a secular sense, but there was some interesting data, Carrie Funk, about religious breakdowns. You sort of asked people how frequently they went to church.
Mm-hmm. It's not surprising that across a lot of these different attitudes and beliefs, we see differences among groups, and particularly in terms of people who are more religiously observant, go to church more often, or we can cut that different ways. And, you know, as a group, these people they're less likely to say something like divorce is preferable to staying in an unhappy marriage. They think it should be more avoided if possible. If you ask things like moral beliefs, you know, they're more likely to say something like premarital sex is wrong or always wrong. So they're kind of across a whole series of questions, tend to take a more conservative stance, if you will.
Carrie Funk is senior researcher at the Pew Research Center in Washington, D.C. She joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks so much for coming in, Carrie.
My pleasure.
And again, you can see all the results from that survey through a link at npr.org/blogofthenation. We've also been joined by Amy Dickinson. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. Amy, before you go, what would you rate on that list? What do you value most in a marriage?
Sense of humor is pretty high, honestly. Anybody who would marry me would have to have one, truly.
She's been talking to us from the studios of Cornell University. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Up next, The Secret Life of a Restaurant Critic. Because of a lawsuit over a bad review, the critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer could be publicly outed. Ruth Reichel, former critic for the New York Times, has been in her share of food fights over the years, and she'll dish on life as a professional diner. Stay with us. I'm Rebecca Roberts. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.